Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, November 17th. Strong quake shakes West Texas. U.S. Geological Survey says 5.4 magnitude earthquake was first of five tremors west of Mentone in matter of 67 minutes. The story was written by Stuart Doreen and Mercedes Cordero. The first of five earthquakes that shook an area west-southwest of Mentone in Reeves County was the third strongest in Texas history. The U.S. Geological Survey reported Wednesday that a 5.4 magnitude earthquake took place around 3:32 p.m. about 25.5 miles west-southwest of Mentone. The quake happened at a depth of 5.5 miles. The strongest quake in the state's history, magnitude 6.5, took place August 16, 1931, near Fort Davis. The second strongest, magnitude 5.7, happened April 14, 1995, near Alpine. There were reports of people being able to feel the 5.4 magnitude earthquake in Midland, which is around 110 miles away from the area where the quakes happened Wednesday. The strongest quake Wednesday was followed by second, third, fourth, and fifth quakes, with a magnitude range of 2.6 to 3.8 within 67 minutes of the first, according to the USGS. At 3:39 p.m., a 2.8 magnitude quake was recorded 24 miles west-southwest of Mentone with a depth of 8.5 miles. A minute later, a 3.4 magnitude quake was reported 22 miles west-southwest of Mentone with a depth of 9 miles. At 4:01 p.m., a 2.6 magnitude quake was recorded 23 miles west-southwest of Mentone with a depth of 9.5 miles. Almost an hour after the 5.4 magnitude quake, the USGS reported a 3.8 magnitude quake 23.6 miles north-northwest of Toya with a depth of 6.4 miles. EarthquakeTrack.com reported Wednesday, following the five quakes, that there have been 38 earthquakes in that area around Mentone in the past week, and 1,634 earthquakes in the past 365 days. In March, the Reporter Telegram reported Permian Basin oil and gas operators have teamed up with the Railroad Commission in crafting a plan to address the growing rate and intensity of seismicity in the region. The first-of-its-kind operator-led response plan, the North Culberson Reeves Seismic Response Area, was being implemented by the Commission. The plan has a goal of reducing the intensity and frequency of earthquakes, including eliminating 3.5 magnitude or greater earthquakes by the end of 2023. A quake with a magnitude of 2.5 to 5.4 is, quote, often felt but only causes minor damage, according to Upsize, an educational site for seismologists. There are about 30,000 quakes each year, according to the site. The USGS also reported the strongest of the quakes near Mentone was the strongest in the United States through 5 p.m. Wednesday. Owners plan to expand activity. Sellers Campbell take longer-term view in forming Double Eagle 4. The story was written by Mella McEwen. After selling Double Eagle 3 to Pioneer Natural Resources for $6.4 billion last year, Cody Campbell and John Sellers are taking the lessons learned from building companies into their new endeavor. After the sale to Pioneer, Campbell and Sellers sat on the sidelines waiting out a non-compete clause. Now the two are busy building Double Eagle Energy 4. The new entity will have the same focus as the previous double Eagles, Midland and Delaware Basins, but Sellers said they plan to expand their activity into the Delaware this time. In Midland, for a Midland Wildcat Committee reception honoring the company, the two said they have already put together a nice acreage position and are confident the expertise that helped them build the first three companies is in place again. Quote, "We're already running two rigs and plan to add two more in the first quarter of 2023, all in the Midland Basin," said Campbell, as the company was honored at a Midland Wildcat Committee reception. He added that the company may move some rigs to the Delaware or even add rigs during the year. Joshua Gregg, chief financial officer, said this new iteration of Double Eagle is the culmination of the company's evolution from non-operated wells in Oklahoma's Scoop Stack play in the first version to Permian Basin-focused non-operated wells with the second version, which sold to Parsley Energy. Seeing opportunities in operating wells, Gregg told his audience at Hart Energy's Executive Oil Conference that the company focused more on actual operations with its next venture, operating seven horizontal rigs and producing 100,000 barrels of oil a day while Double Eagle 3 sold to Pioneer. Quote, "With Double Eagle 2 and 3, we were always focused on where is the market and where do we need to be," Gregg said. "It was ever-changing goalposts, and we can be prepared for where the market goes. With Double Eagle 3, we had to show we could execute," end quote. The new Double Eagle won't be building as large an acreage position as its predecessors, according to Gregg, and will follow a just-in-time strategy of being able to add rigs as markets warrant or opportunities arise that will add to the company's cash flow. A longer-term strategy and focusing on results will help the company better adjust to market changes, he said. In addition to expanding its focus on the Delaware, Sellers said they will be focusing on costs and cost containment, especially with inflation at 40-year highs. Quote, "Everyone is aware of inflation drilling and completion costs," Gregg said. There has been no problem, however, raising capital for the startup. Double Eagle Management and NCAP Investments, along with minority investments from Apollo Resource Funds, Magnetar Capital, and other partners, have raised more than $1.7 billion in equity. Sellers attributed the backing to their positive track record. He acknowledged that there is less capital in the system than 3 or 4 years ago. Quote, "We have a great team, that's the main thing," said Campbell. "At times, it's not been easy, but we've worked hard, we've been diligent, at times we had no choice. Each day has been a series of small, good decisions. We change course if we need to, but stack all those small decisions together and they become something good," end quote. Agreed Sellers, quote, "Hundreds and thousands of decisions add up and culminate in a living, breathing business," end quote. Not much said about cost of Hogan Park during forum. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. The Hogan Park Project Forum held Tuesday showed the evolution of an issue from campaign season. Gone was the fanfare of the yearly maintenance and operations costs. During the campaign, it was mentioned that an escalator could lift those costs into the hundreds of millions of dollars annually. There wasn't much talk of a CPI, or Consumer Price Index, but the topics of the night at the MLK Junior Community Center focused on other topics, including the board that will oversee the park, representation on that board by people in Midland City Council District 2, water, and Centennial Park, which is located in downtown. Here are takeaways from the event. Representation. During the meeting, it became apparent that those in attendance wanted to talk about the board that will oversee the park. In the public-private model, there is a board that governs the park, from its rules and regulations to the budget that the park will require. The downtown park, Centennial Park, is overseen by a 5-person board. 3 of those seats are filled by those who helped organize, develop, construct, and raise the money for Centennial Park, the Downtown Conservancy. The 2 remaining seats are filled by the City of Midland. There were questions about what this board would look like, including would those faces look like people who live in District 2 in Midland, where Hogan Park resides. But members of the Midland City Council and the 1 member of the Conservancy on the panel stated was there were plenty of unknowns at this time. Because the agreement has not been worked out, they could not say how many people will serve on the board. They did not know how many seats will be filled by those on the Quality of Place Conservancy, and how many will be filled by the City of Midland, and they could not say how many residents from District 2 would serve on the board, although they were receptive to representation from those living in District 2. It became apparent that those living in District 2 were afraid of a park being built that would not be accessible to residents who lived in the region. Downtown Park. There has been a lot of hoopla about Centennial Park in downtown Midland. On Tuesday night, the downtown park didn't seem so well received. Multiple speakers seemed annoyed at the Centennial Park restrictions. Those people included Midland Mayor Patrick Payton, who answered a question, and it seemed mocking the rules in place, stating he was careful where he walked his dog, a reference to dogs not being allowed in the Great Lawn at Centennial, and that he did have balloons. Balloons for parties are not allowed during a recent trip to Centennial. Payton also said leaders wanted to take good things from the downtown park, like the private-public concept. He said that tens of millions of private dollars were available because of the conservancy idea. Quote, "The people donating the dollars want this to go to the park," Payton said. Others, including those on the panel, mentioned this would be operated by a different conservancy, and Midlanders could expect different rules. Water. There was discussion about water underneath the park. Mayor-elect Lori Blong again mentioned that the contract would not include the sale of water or mineral rights to the conservancy. How much water is ultimately allowed to be used will be determined through contract negotiations between the City of Midland and the conservancy. Those on the panel stated that Midlanders need to remember that artificial turf will be the playing surface of a vast number of playing fields at the new Hogan Park, and that would limit the amount of water needed, they said. Put Hogan Park Project to a vote. In response to a question about putting the Hogan Park Project to a vote of Midlanders, Payton rhetorically asked the questioner if a vote of the greater public would be required every time the city spends $10 million. He stated that the Midland City Council probably cast votes on items totaling $10 million at the meeting earlier in the day. He then said council members are elected to make decisions. Council member Dan Corrales said the city charter gives exclusive control and that language could be used to put the fate of the park on a ballot. Other things. Mayor-elect Lori Blong said Tuesday that the Quality of Place Conservancy would grow and ultimately have multiple projects across Midland. Blong also said after her mayoral election victory that she has stepped down from serving on the Quality of Place Conservancy Board. When an issue of cost did come up, Quality of Place Conservancy member Jeff Beard said using the numbers reported in a Reporter Telegram article that the city averaged spending $2 million per year, $700,000 in maintenance and operations, and $1.3 million in capital over the previous 10 years.
Hello, this is Michael, and I'm reading a story from the inside pages of the Midland Reporter Telegram, Thursday, November 17th, 2022. SOE focuses on Permian Basin's literacy proficiency by Ben Schaefer. Business leaders and educators spoke at the State of Education, organized by the Midland Chamber of Commerce Wednesday at the Bush Convention Center. This year's topic was the lack of literacy proficiency in the Permian Basin. Kate Williamson, who moderated the panel, had the audience take an online survey before the discussions began. The quiz illustrated facts and statistics about the importance of strong literacy rates. According to the survey, a person's literacy rate affects food security, earning potential, and life expectancy. The next question in the poll was, what percentage of adults in the Permian Basin would have difficulty reading this sentence? The answer was 50%. There are hundreds of thousands of people in the Permian Basin that read below a third grade level. John Trachitti, executive director of the Literacy Coalition of the Permian Basin, said. And then we wonder why we have this perpetuation of food insecurity, and you can't find workers, you can't find truck drivers, you can't find teachers. And it starts, at least in my opinion, with that foundational need for basic literacy skills. CEO of Abel Hanger Foundation, Mark Palmer, shared that in Midland County, there are 29,000 people who read at or below a fifth grade level. We really want to make everyone aware of the severity of the issue, and that's part of our message today, Palmer said. He added that in the 22-county region that makes up the Permian Basin, there are 157,000 people who read at a fifth grade level or less. Adrian Carrasco, owner of Premier Energy Services and a member of the Midland College Board of Trustees, described how lacking literacy abilities affects the workforce. How important is training? How important is skill training? That's what we're talking about today, he said. He continued to say that many jobs in the oil and gas industry require skill in reading words and numbers. To fix this adult literacy issue, Carrasco said it's important for companies to offer these resources to employees. Mary Ann Benatti, head of Human Resources Lower 48 for ConocoPhillips, said she was shocked by the statistics presented to her regarding literacy in the region. The first thing that came to my mind was safety. We spend a lot of time talking about signage in the field, how to make sure our workers are safe out in the field, because the jobs we're asking them to do are difficult. Sometimes they can become unsafe quickly, she said. Beninati said getting a job at an oil company can change someone's life, but lacking literacy skills can greatly hinder an individual looking to apply for one. Trachitti added that a statistic regarding literacy that always jumps out to him is the fact that lacking literacy abilities can shorten someone's lifespan by 20 years. In response to this issue, the panelists implored successful business people to go out into the community and help those who may be hesitant to share the fact that their literacy skills are below their age level. It's difficult for an adult to come forward and say, I can't read, and I need help with that, Palmer said. He told the audience to create a bond with people like young family members by reading them stories. We've got big tasks that are associated with improving literacy in this area, and we have smaller things that each of you can do, he added. Each panelist advised the audience to think about ways to assist in improving literacy, big or small. Palmer added that people of faith should feel especially motivated to do so in the name of sharing the Bible or other holy books. Beninati asked the audience to take time every day to think about what life would be like without the ability to read proficiently. Don't let this be that luncheon I went to, she said. Really take these messages and carry them with you. There were books available on the audience's tables to donate to a library, school, or individual. Additionally, there were membership and donation forms from the Literacy Coalition of the Permian Basin.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, November 17th, 2022. What's up with Midland? At the Horseshoe Arena. The Grifty Grinchmas Market, Friday and Saturday. Silver Spur Trade Show, Saturday and Sunday. Carden International Circus, Monday. at La Hacienda Event Center. Gary Allen, Friday. Grupo Arriesgado, Los Tres de la Palma y Adolfo Urias, November 25th. At Little Woodrow's, Drinks Giving, November 23rd. At Midland Community Theater, A Christmas Carol, November 25th through 27th. At the Museum of the Southwest, Midland Downtown Farmers Market, Saturday, November 26th. At the Tailgate, Moonlight Mistletoe Market, Friday, William Beckman, November 25th. At the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center, A Magic Cirque Christmas, Sunday, Lindsay Sterling Snow Waltz Tour, Monday. At Woody's Hideaway, FIFA World Cup Watch Party, USA v. Wales, Monday, Mexico v. Poland, Tuesday, USA v. England, November 25th, Mexico v. Argentina, November 26th, USA v. Iran, November 29th, and Mexico v. Saudi Arabia, November 30th. Three things to do in Midland. The Gifty Grinchmas Market is at the Horseshoe Arena Friday and Saturday. Shop with the Grinch. Looking to start checking boxes on the Christmas wish list but only want to purchase local? The Gifty Grinchmas Market, created by Midland Boutiques, The Pink Pug, and Thirsty Bird Company, hosts more than 60 vendors. Besides shopping, guests can partake in cocktails, a lounge, axe throwing, photo booths, permanent jewelry, face painting, and a kid's coloring station. Some of this year's shops include Coco Bananas Boutique, Simple and Sassy, Sellers Aromatics, Luna Nera Candle Company, The Little Heifer, Baby Biz, Sarah Kate's Kitchen, Downright Boozy, Alpha Luxury Pet Grooming, and many, many more. With 100% of the door proceeds going to 311 Ministries, the crew hopes to beat their 2021 donation total of $13,656. The price runs at $5 for everyone over 12 years old. For more information on the event, visit www.facebook.com/TheGiftyGrinchmas Market. 4 to 8 p.m. Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Saturday at 2514 Arena Trail. Channel Your Inner Artist. Happening at the Texas Lodge Bar and Grill, Odessa's Wine and Canvas makes the trip to the Tall City to host an early day artistic event for all. With no talent or previous skill necessary, guests can pick a seat already equipped with supplies and paint until their heart bursts. For this weekend's guided class, participants will create a purple moonlit night encompassing a fluid circular motion of stars, similar to a time lapse. With local artists and other skilled teachers, patrons can surely walk away from the good time with a beautifully decorated canvas and a belly full of their preferred drink. The $30 ticket can be bought at wineandcanvas.com/Odessa/events. 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday at 503 East I-20, Suite 130. Have your mind blown. Kicking off its holiday season, the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center will host a magical Cirque Christmas full of mind-bending acts and air-flipping aerobatics, including feats of strength, unbelievable balancing, juggling, and more. The festive spectacular will be hosted by award-winning comedic magician Lucy Darling. For more information on the event and to buy tickets, visit wagnerknoll.com or magicalcirquechristmas.com. At the Wagner Knoll, 1310 North FM 1788.
Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, November 17th. Herbert Lloyd Joyner, age 93, passed away on Friday, November 11th in Dallas. He was born May 15th, 1929 in Duster, Texas, to Herbert and Stella Joyner. Lloyd was raised in Jal, New Mexico. He worked for Pure Oil as a roustabout until 1950, when he was then drafted into the United States Army during the Korean conflict. In 1953, he met and married Bonnie Jean Williams, which resulted in 69 wonderful years of marriage and 3 children. After marriage, the couple settled in Kermit, Texas. In 1974, they were transferred to Midland. They resided in Midland until 2019, when they moved to Dallas to be near family. He is preceded in death by his parents, Herbert and Stella Joyner, siblings Otis Joyner and Dorothy Workman, and his daughter-in-law, Becky Joyner. He is survived by his wife, Bonnie Joyner, of Dallas, son, Michael Joyner, and wife, Patty, of Lubbock, Steve Joyner and wife, Linda, of Nashville, Tennessee, and daughter, Roxanne Wright, and husband, Dennis, of Plano, Texas. He is survived by 8 grandchildren and 12 great-grandchildren. A funeral service will be held on Thursday, November 17th at 10 a.m., at the Ted Dickey West Funeral Home in Dallas. Burial will be Tuesday, November 29th at 2 p.m. at the Kermit Cemetery in Kermit. A reception for Herbert will be held Thursday, November 17th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Ted Dickey West Funeral Home in Dallas, followed by a funeral service from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Fond memories and expressions of sympathy may be shared at www.teddickeywestfuneral.com for the Joyner family. Lisa Luann Hopkins Hollifield passed away peacefully Thursday, November 10th in Midland. Lisa was the firstborn child of Dugan and Linda Hopkins, arriving September 17th, 1958 in Jena, Louisiana. Steve and Lisa became high school sweethearts after their first date on November 7, 1975. They were married January 15, 1983, in Crane, Texas. Lisa is preceded in death by the love of her life, husband Steve LaMail Hollifield Jr. of Midland, father Carlton Douglas Dugan Hopkins of Midland, brother Douglas Nelson Hopper Hopkins, a great-niece Hunter Ann Smith of Midland, and a great-nephew Gunner Craig Smith of Powell, Tennessee. Mother-in-law, Sandra Neal Hollifield of Midland. Father-in-law, Steve LaMail Hollifield of Midland. Brother-in-law, James Jeffrey Hollifield of Midland. Lisa is survived by her 4 children, daughters Landry Allison Hollifield of Midland, Lindsay Janelle Venerable, and husband Travis Michael Venerable of Midland, Laramie Jane Hollifield and fiancé Brett Vaughn Harriman of Sunnyvale, Texas, son Lemuel Jacob Jake Hollifield of Midland, as well as several grandchildren. The family will receive friends on Thursday, November 17th, from 5 to 7 p.m. at the branch at Nally Pickle and Welch in Midland. Her celebration of life will be held Friday at 2 p.m. at Stonegate Fellowship Church. Interment will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. The family asked that any donation made in her name be directed to the All Heart Gunner Foundation, a foundation very near to her heart, in honor of her great-nephew, Gunner. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Michael Martin Holly passed away on November 9th in Midland. Services will be held at Nally Pickle and Welch on November 19th at 10 a.m. Michael was born November 27, 1978, in San Francisco, California, to Agnes Holly and Brian Holly. Michael received his Bachelor of Science in Business from Menlo College with a minor in Irish History. He most recently worked as a business development manager for Benmark Supply Company. Michael is survived by his wife, Amanda Holly, daughter, Una Holly, stepsons, Riggs and Beau Baxter, mother, Agnes Holly, father, Brian Holly, sister, Tara Baldridge, and niece, Taylor Payton. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Carolyn O'Donnell, age 58, of Midland, passed away on Monday, November 14th. Viewing will be Thursday, November 17th, from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., with a rosary at 7 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral Mass is set for Friday, November 18th, at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine. Funeral service is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com. Daniel Leyva, age 18, of Midland, passed away alongside his brother Ricardo Leyva, age 25, on November 13th in Midland. Funeral service will be held for both brothers on November 19th at 11 a.m. at Greater Ideal Baptist Church. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory in Midland.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I'm reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Thursday, November 17th. Food Bank sees increased need. The West Texas Food Bank, which helps feed residents in 19 counties, is seeing an explosion of the number of people seeking help, higher even than during COVID-19, said Chief Executive Officer Libby Campbell. The food bank is on track to distribute 15.6 million pounds of food this year compared to the 13.2 million pounds it distributed last year, Campbell said. Prior to the pandemic, the food bank would serve 6.8 million pounds a year. In Odessa alone, the food bank is helping 500 to 600 families per week, said Autumn Bohannon, Content Marketing Manager. Most of the people we're seeing having jobs, and over 25% of them have never needed assistance before, Campbell said. However, she also said they're seeing an increase in the number of people who are homeless or living inside their vehicles. Last week, 365 sought assistance during the American Legion distribution when the typical number would be around 80, she said. They're also seeing an increased need when it comes to the bank's Food for Kids program and senior programs. She attributes roughly 85% of the increase to inflation. During the pandemic, the USDA helped with commodities, but it's no longer doing so, Campbell said. As a result, the food bank hopes people will come through for them with monetary and food donations. She'd also love to see more businesses and churches organize food drives. They also need volunteers to help on distribution food lines, packing boxes, separating donations. Campbell said she was pleased to announce that during the holiday season, a bell hanger foundation will match everyone's donation dollars up to $100,000. The food bank has 100 nonprofit agencies, most of which are churches and small food pantries that are located in low-income areas. One of those partners is St. James Missionary Baptist Church. Chris Walker, a member of St. James and president of the Black Chamber of Commerce Permian Basin, announced this week they'll be hosting a holiday feed for the second year in a row due to the increased needs. On December 9th, the church will host its monthly food box giveaway, but on December 16th, church members and chamber members will provide a hot takeaway meal, toys, clothing, and jackets for those in need, Walker said. We have families that are still struggling. Our numbers have constantly increased, and that's not good. We've noticed in the last 3 months our numbers have increased, Walker said of the church's box program. When the church began its program, members were handing out 75 boxes a month. This past Friday, we ran out at 125. We had to turn some vehicles away, which we really hated, Walker said. He, too, attributes the increase to inflation. It's unreal, man, I'm thinking to myself. I'm a retired oil field person, and things are pretty expensive even for myself. And you take someone that's on a fixed income, and their salaries haven't been adjusted for inflation. They're getting their same check, but the price of food and all of the groceries are still going up, Walker said. We've had some people basically tell us at our food distributions that if it weren't for these organizations that hand out food, they don't know how they'd eat at the end of the month. During last month's event, Campbell said the chamber and church fed 220 families. He remembers one gentleman arriving in a t-shirt and shorts despite freezing temperatures. He didn't have anything, but he was able to find pants, a jacket, and some shirts, and he was able to wear them away, Walker said. It was really touching that we were able to help him out, and we were just glad he wasn't too proud to not accept. As for this year, Campbell suspects they'll be seeing more families. I would love to see our numbers decrease because that means we're doing better. But if we have to, I would love to reach at least 250 families, he said. Santa made an appearance last year, and they suspect he'll find time in his schedule to come again this year, Walker said. Because the hot meal giveaway will be catered, Walker said the church and chamber would be grateful for monetary donations. They're also looking for clothing, jacket, and toy donations. Holiday celebrations. Christmas tree market to return to Parks Legato. Those in need of a Christmas tree, wreath, or poinsettia will soon be in luck this weekend as the Parks Legato Town Center annual Christmas tree market returns. The market will include sights, shopping, free visits with Santa, and more to celebrate the holiday season. The event will take place over the span of 3 weekends beginning this Friday through Sunday, November 25th through 27th, and the weekend of December 2nd through 4th. The market will be located at the Parks Legato Town Center, 72,060 State Highway 191. Hours for the market will be 5 to 9 p.m. Fridays, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. Saturdays, 1 p.m. to 6 p.m. Sundays each weekend. In addition, each Saturday's events will include vendor markets from 5 to 9 p.m. Over 80 local vendors will be on site, in addition to the Christmas trees, wreaths, garlands, poinsettias, and other holiday decor. Shoppers will also get to enjoy live music and performances, as well as activities for children and free photos with Santa Claus. Santa photos will be available during the evening hours each day from 5 to 9 p.m. We'll have a vendor market where we'll have a lot of local vendors like boutiques and artists and baked goods that'll come out those evenings, and it'll be from 5 to 9 p.m. those evenings. Marketing coordinator Elise Hudson said, we'll also have free visits from Santa. We'll have free hot cocoa. We'll be selling Christmas trees during that time. It's just a fun thing that a lot of people come out to and kick off the Christmas season. The proceeds go directly to the Permian High School Band, which also staffs and helps coordinate the entire market. Our team is out there to make sure that the electricity and stuff like that doesn't go out, but they really do staff the whole thing, Hudson said. They're always a huge help and make it a success each year. The tree market first started in 2018 and has grown larger this year. The first year that we did it, it just started with the Permian Band selling Christmas trees, and they had about 5 vendors that would come out on the weekends, Hudson said. There was probably about a couple hundred guests that came out to the market. Last year, we had over 75 vendors and probably about 3,000 to 5,000 people that came out to the event. It's really grown drastically. Each year, we have to up how many trees we have to order. When Parks Legato started the market back in 2018, it was intentionally designed as a fundraising opportunity for a school or nonprofit. The event was presented to many schools and organizations. Hudson says the Permian Band was the only one to take a chance on the event. The Permian Band has been with us since then, Hudson said. We reached out to local nonprofits, and the Permian Band was the only one that wanted to do it. It's grown every year. It keeps getting bigger and bigger each year. This year's event will display a 40-foot community Christmas tree, more lights and decor than before, and hold Saturday's vendor markets with over 75 local vendors. I think the main thing that people love is when you go out there, every person that you see has a smile on their face and having the best time ever, Hudson said. It's kind of like a Hallmark movie. It's a cool little tree market, and then there is a vendor market. Everyone's super happy. They're surprised that something like that is out in West Texas. Hudson says each year the trees are brought in from Wisconsin, while the wreaths and garlands come in from North Carolina. They're fresh-cut Fraser fir trees and wreaths, Hudson said. Those are the best that do well out here in West Texas with our climate. We get our poinsettias from local organizations in Odessa, as well as a local nursery. For more information about the market, go to tinyurl.com/YC2T3KPT. ORMC named in two lawsuits. The widow of an Odessa man who died a month after undergoing gallbladder surgery has filed a lawsuit against the general surgeon who performed the procedure and Odessa Regional Medical Center. According to the lawsuit filed Monday in Ector County District Court, Don Poston, 66, underwent a laparoscopic gallbladder removal on October 19, 2020, but had to undergo a second surgery 4 days later. During the surgery, he developed an irregular heartbeat, paroxysmal atrial fibrillation, and acute retinal failure, the lawsuit stated. In addition, the lawsuit alleges Poston developed an infection and pneumonia, and he died on November 20, 2020. The lawsuit alleges Dr. Terry Unruh, who performed the surgery, failed to recognize or acknowledge his recognition of Poston's symptoms, failed to limit the likelihood or possibility of infection, and failed to control the infection and pneumonia. Jill Poston's attorney, Lane Goodhay of Odessa, states in the lawsuit, ORMC is responsible because it was responsible for hiring, training, and supervising Unruh. Jill Poston is seeking unspecified damages for the conscious pain and suffering and mental anguish the decedent suffered prior to death, and for the reasonable and necessary medical, funeral, and burial expenses which were reasonably incurred because of such wrongful death. She is also seeking unspecified punitive damages, stating Unruh was aware of the risks, but nevertheless proceeded with conscious indifference to the rights, safety, or welfare of plaintiff and others. ORMC President Stacy Brown said the hospital does not comment on pending litigation. Unruh did not return a phone call seeking comment. ORMC is also being sued by Basin Surgical Properties. According to a lawsuit filed in Ector County District Court, Basin Surgical Properties leased the medical facility at 900 East 4th Street to ORMC for a period of 7 years, starting in June 2015. The hospital was expected to pay $1.1 million annually. In August 2021, ORMC notified Basin Surgical Properties it intended to renew the lease for 5 years, and both parties agreed to have a third party conduct a fair market rent analysis of the property, and that company determined the rent should increase to $1,166,000 annually, the lawsuit stated. Although the hospital had 15 days to rescind its renewal after receiving the quote, it didn't, the lawsuit stated. Instead, according to the lawsuit, the hospital waited until 7 days before the new lease was to start to repudiate the renewal of the lease. Basin Surgical Properties attorney Murray Crutcher III of Atkins, Hallman Jones, Peacock, Lewis & Lyon allege the hospital has defaulted on its rent payment since June. He further claims the hospital hastily and without regard to damage to the leased premises removed its personal property and trade fixtures from the property on July 1st without giving notice and without locking the doors. Defendant abandoned all semblance of any normal procedure for moving out of a leased space, much less a multi-million-dollar medical facility, the lawsuit states. The defendant did not even bother returning the keys of the leased premises to the plaintiff. Instead, the defendant simply left the keys inside the unlocked building, unknowing whether the plaintiff would find them. In short, defendant snuck off into the night as a deadbeat tenant, hoping that it could avoid its landlord and the obligations it had abandoned, the lawsuit stated. Because Basin Surgical Properties thought for 10 months ORMC was renewing its contract, the company didn't try to find other tenants. As a result, the company was seeking lost rent in the amount of $5,830,000 plus other unspecified damages. On Tuesday, court documents indicate Global Healthcare Properties acquired all interest in the property and is now pursuing the lawsuit against ORMC, with Crutcher representing them. The company is still seeking the back rent, too. In a written response filed with the court, ORMC's attorney, Thomas Yoxall, denies each and every all and singular allegations contained within the lawsuit. Quick Hits, Bilingual Storytime. The Ector County Library, 321 West 5th Street, will present a bilingual story time at 10 a.m. today. For more information, call 432-332-0633 or visit ector.lib.tx.us. Cold and COVID Clinic. The Ector County Health Department has scheduled mobile flu and COVID clinic from 1 p.m. to 6 p.m. today at the Southside Senior Center parking lot, 900 South Dixie Boulevard. Flu vaccine is $25. Call 432-498-4141 or visit tinyurl.com/3J28S98Y. Taco and Chili Cook-Off. The Rig Riders Motorcycle Club has scheduled the 4th annual Taco and Chili Cook-Off from 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. today at the Broken Horn Bar and Grill, 111 East County Road, 132 Midland. There will be food, live music, a silent auction, and more. Entrance is free. Registration for competitors starts at $50. Visit tinyurl.com/2p83ZFVT. Book Talk. The Ellen Noel Art Museum, 4919 East University Boulevard, has scheduled a discussion of Alina by Rachel Pastan from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. today. Admission is free. Visit tinyurl.com/2p6adkth. Lecture. Midland College, 3600 North Garfield Street, Midland, has scheduled 3 events featuring award-winning American poet and writer Jimmy Santiago Baca from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. today and from 9 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. Friday. Baca will give lectures about his interesting and inspirational life that included learning to read as a young adult while serving a 5-year sentence in a maximum security prison. Today, Baca is a prolific artist of the spoken and written word and has won numerous awards for his works. The event is free. For more information, call 432-685-6810. West Texas Winds. The Jack Rogers Fine Art Center, 201 West University, will present Quintessential by West Texas Winds at 7:30 p.m. today. General admission is $15. For more information or to purchase tickets, visit tinyurl.com/4EXBP7FT. Education Foundation presents Plan. The Education Foundation's president-elect, Lisa Wyman, presented accomplishments and future plans to the Ector County ISD Board of Trustees Tuesday night. Trustee Donna Smith was absent. Starting in 2000, the Education Foundation is a nonprofit 501c3 organization whose mission is to create opportunities for education in Ector County ISD. Their vision is that every student in ECISD will be school-ready, college-ready, work-ready, and world-ready. Wyman said they are looking for 2 mobile vehicles to be used for community outreach. She said they would be rolling out this year, and Assistant Superintendent of Student and School Support, Alicia Syverson, will be leading the project. The Education Foundation received its first check for $75,000 from XTO Energy. A few of the largest Education Foundation projects through the years are Food to Kids, backpacks filled with nutritious food, started in 2010, now has expanded to other food outreach programs. Bookworms involves volunteer readers, more than $540,000 invested, including purchase of 38 book vending machines, and over 6,700 students per month impacted, 1,000 incentive to ECISD's 2 Teachers of the Year. Provide partial funding for the district's grant writer, with the other half coming from the district. Support AVID from its inception in ECISD with more than $1 million invested, $150,000 in student scholarships, more than 930 teacher grants have been funded worth $2.7 million. Contributed to advanced placement and international baccalaureate programs, innovation department, career and technical education, teacher training, and data research. The foundation's future plans are to focus on grants for innovative initiatives that can be scaled widely, celebrate educators for their work, and continue collaborative efforts with the community. Wyman said they also want to expand the foundation's board to more accurately reflect the community it serves. Under purchases of $50,000 or more, the board approved having PBK Architects to update the 2017 facilities study. Supplemental agenda material said the cost is $194,000. The study is being updated in preparation for a potential bond issue. Superintendent Scott Murray said this week is National Substitute Educator Week. We have 500 of these individuals in ECISD serving elementary, middle, and high school. They are not all busy every day. This Thursday, we are going to celebrate these individuals from 5 to 6:30 p.m. at NTO, Murray said. It will be a drop-in event. If you happen to see a sub this week, let them know how much you appreciate them, Murray said. The board also asked a closed session, voted to terminate employment contract of Community Engagement Specialist Megan Powell for a good cause. Trustee Dennis Jones abstained. They also voted 4-2 to hire Jessica Gore as Executive Director of Accountability. Gore joins ECISD after 3-plus years as the principal of San Jacinto Middle School in Midland. She has experience in several Texas school districts as a teacher, assistant principal, instructional coach, interventionist, and teacher development specialist, the recap said. Trustees Carol Gregg and Delma Avalos voted no. Avalos said she would have preferred to hire someone from within for that position. Learned they got an unmodified opinion on its financial statements and heard the annual financial report. Under special presentations, the district recognized 6 nurses selected by Permian Basin Grade 25 nurses. Approved application for appraised value limitations on qualified property pursuant to Chapter 313 of the Texas Tax Code, submitted by DG Penwell North, LLC, and Ophelia Solar. The comptroller's website says an appraised value limitation is an agreement in which a taxpayer agrees to build or install property and create jobs in exchange for a 10-year limitation on the taxable property value for school district maintenance and operation tax, M&O, purposes. The minimum limitation value varies by school district. The board recap said an important benefit is, in addition to interest and sinking tax revenue, these Chapter 313 agreements include maintenance and operations tax protection and supplemental payment from the companies, which are not subject to recapture nor state funding reductions. Generally speaking, the state of Texas wants school districts to seek voter approval for bond building projects, so the additional revenue does not have any bearing on bond proposals presented by the citizens of Ector County. And again, the tax limitation is not granted for debt service funds that pay off bonds, the recap said. Trustees voted 6-0 to approve revisions to board policy FFAC, local, wellness and health services, medical treatment. This revision authorizes a registered nurse or other designated and trained district employee to store and administer opioid antagonist medication, Narcan, in the case of an overdose on school property. Prior to this approval, ECISD police officers were the only district employees authorized and trained to administer this type of medication. Voted 6-0 to approve the annual financial report. Every school district is required to prepare annual financial statements, have them audited by an external public accounting firm, and submit them to the state. The auditor, Whitley Penn, issued an unmodified opinion, meaning a clean report with no internal control findings related to the financial report and no findings related to compliance. The recap said the financial report shows the largest areas of school district expenditures by function are instruction, 56%, and plant maintenance and operations. This report follows last month's announcement of a perfect score of 100 on the state's first report of financial integrity. Voted 6-0 to approve West Texas National Bank as an approved investment tool. Diversification of investments is a requirement of the Texas Public Funds Investment Act, which is set forth in the Texas Government Code, Chapter 2256. Trustees voted 6-0 to approve ECISD's participation in the General Services Administration Advantage Purchasing Co-op. Trustees voted 6-0 to approve the consent agenda. This month's consent agenda included minutes of previous meetings, bills of payment, acceptance of donations over $10,000, the quarterly investment report, retainer agreement with Welch, Gallegos, Trevina, Russo, and Kyle PC for special education legal services, additional 2022-23 T-test appraisers, a data sharing agreement with Hanover Research, and authorized investment representatives. Special presentation included announcement of the Texas Art Education Association District of Distinction Award and the recognition of the top fundraisers for ECISD's United Way campaign. Department Technology Services, $6,285.88. Elementary, Gonzales Elementary, $3,501.60. Middle School, Crockett Middle School, $4,672. High School, Odessa High School, $9,603.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.